In France today, an historic trial begins of the 20 men charged in the horrific 2015 terror attacks on restaurants, cafes, the Bataclan concert hall, and a stadium in Paris. 130 were killed, hundreds were injured, thousands terrorized. One of the accused says he'll testify he gave up his profession to become a fighter for the Islamic State, ISIS. After the 9/11 attacks by al-Qaeda, President George W. Bush declared a war on terror, and at that time people warned it would be like trying to nail a jellyfish to a wall. Well, al-Qaeda was soon joined by ISIS, ISIS-K, lone wolves, who don't follow rules of war or fight on a front. The U.S. led an invasion of Afghanistan to get Osama bin Laden. Then 2 years later invaded Iraq because President Bush said its leader, Saddam Hussein, supported bin Laden and had weapons of mass destruction. Both were untrue. Many countries then went on to fight ISIS in Syria. But after those terrible attacks in Paris, Brussels, London a few years ago, there seems to be a lull. So where are we in the war on terror? Suad McKennitt is a Washington Post correspondent who covers national security and terrorism in Europe. She's spoken to radicalized jihadists, and she's covered this for decades. So, Suad, what is your answer? Where are we?
Well, there are many, there are different layers to this. So on one hand, I would say we do have a situation where ISIS was weaker in the past 2-3 years, which had to do with the collapse of its caliphate in Syria and in Iraq. And there was, you could say, a decline in motivation amongst some of these people who have joined ISIS.
Well, you mentioned a caliphate. This was the goal of al-Qaeda. This is the goal of ISIS, to put the world under Islamic rulership. Now, we rush to say many who practice Islam, many in the Muslim faith, saw this as a hijacking of their faith, but that's what it was.
Yeah, I'm Muslim myself. So let me tell you, after the 9/11 attacks, this was for me a big shock. Mm. And as somebody who grew up, you know, in a Muslim family in Europe, suddenly to realize that there are people out there who had such a radical interpretation and who had joined an ideology that kind of like hijacked, as you said, the religion for their political motivations. It was a big shock for me and for millions of Muslims, of course, yeah, all around the world. However, when you ask where are we today, so to be very honest with you, what I see online, what I hear from people when I speak to them, people who used to be or who are still members of ISIS or who are members of al-Qaeda, is that they feel a new motivation given that the Taliban are back in Afghanistan. So if extremist groups see the return of the Taliban as a new motivating factor in, you know, being able to recruit more people and to build new terrorist camps, then I must say what I foresee for the future is not going to be very rosy, unfortunately.
Well, let's pick up there, because we also have to distinguish, and this again is part of this murky world that the U.S., the Western world, is trying to understand, has been trying to understand for over 20 years. The Taliban, they see themselves as, you know, a political group, you know, a military group that's going to be the leader of the country. There's that distinction that has to be made as well.
There is a very important point you're saying here. When we talk about the Taliban, we learned about the government, the interim government of the Taliban, and we saw suddenly that Mullah Barada, who's seen as somebody who's part of the, if you can even say that, a more open-minded fraction within the Taliban. He's the deputy now, but the person who got the so-called prime minister's position at the moment is someone who's known to be, you know, a more extreme hardliner. And that tells you a lot. And it actually also confirms what I, for example, described in my book. When I met a Taliban commander who is a member of the decision-making body of the Taliban a few years ago, and he said to me, look at my hand. Does every finger look alike here? And I said, no, of course not. And he said, and this is how our group is. We have different fractions within the group. We have some people who are more extremist. We have others who try to be more, you know, reformist. So we have to really see which fraction of the Taliban will be the more powerful one.
Do you think it's fair to say, or is it too simplistic to say, that the war in Afghanistan actually created more terrorism? You had very few voices against it at the time. We have to remember the pain, just the terrible, terrible pain of that assault on this country. And it was considered un-American to not want to go after these terrorists. But there were voices like Congresswoman Barbara Lee, the only one to vote against the 2001 authorization for military force. I remember speaking to historians like Anthony Cordesman, who said, you know, maybe a surgical police action to go get Osama bin Laden, as opposed to taking over a country and trying to impose democracy on Afghanistan while you look for Osama bin Laden. He pointed to the Soviets. Look what happened to the Soviets, who also had to, you know, leave the country tail between legs. So there were some voices against it, but is it fair to say they were right, that it actually was that invasion and the one that followed in Iraq that fanned the flames of the terrorism that might have been there?
After the attacks on September 11th, there were many people, I mean, the vast majority of people that I spoke to within Muslim communities understood that the United States of America would have to go after the people who were behind the attacks. So I did not see that back then in 2001 and 2002, that the war in Afghanistan was the most motivating point for people within jihadist circles. But what I can say for sure is that the war in Iraq definitely became one of the biggest PR gifts for Al-Qaeda, because they used that to say, see, now you understand why we did the 9/11 attacks, because this country is planning to invade Muslim land. This country is supporting the wrong forces in the Middle East. Then the other point that later became a big motivation was when President Obama began to send a lot of drones into Waziristan.
And I mentioned that there was a lull. It seems like a lull after terrible attacks. The truck that drove into crowds at the Berlin Christmas market in 2016, shootings and bombings in Paris in November 2015 at the Bataclan Theater, the Charlie Hebdo attack, bombings in London in 2005. What do you read into the fact that there haven't been more lately?
So what we saw happening in Europe was that in the, let's say, past 2-3 years, we had kind of like smaller attacks. We have not seen, you're absolutely right, something that was like the Bataclan attacks in Paris. But the way these people who have dedicated their lives for what they call fighting jihad, they get their motivations from moments when they believe, okay, here's an opening for us to go and do something. And this is why I'm saying, I think we all have to be aware, we have to watch very carefully what is happening in Afghanistan now, because that might become a new motivator for some of the groups to send messages out and tell their sleeper cells or lone wolves, you should go and do an attack now.
Is there anything that can be done? I mean, what about that thinking? Well, if people had jobs or if people weren't feeling disenfranchised, you know, that was the conversation after 9/11. What is it that made people so disenfranchised that they would be attracted to this? Is there anything that can be done to tamp down the desire for someone to be radicalized and become part of a terrorist organization?
The question is, who do you empower within societies? Do we have any role models for the Muslim community? If you look at most of the movies or TV series in the past, when we saw Muslim characters, they were most of the time either terrorists or the wives of terrorists or the mothers of terrorists or whatever. It sometimes starts with these really small steps. But what is also very important is, I think there has to be a clarity within, you know, Western governments, to be honest. You know, I remember very well how after the September 11th attacks, one of the main motivating factors, for example, for the German government to go and join the U.S. in the war against the Taliban was that they said, we have to free the women. Mm. Who's talking about the women today in Afghanistan?
Suad McKennitt, a correspondent for The Washington Post, also author of the book I Was Told to Come Alone, My Journey Behind the Lines of Jihad. Suad, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.